Hey, it's Greg. This is the Square Pizza Pod, cooked up by Sherm Co.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Square Pizza Pod. In today's episode, Greg is in conversation with Maurice Jones, who is the CEO of 110. 110 connects Black talent to well-paying job opportunities through their career marketplace. In this episode, you will learn about his background, which includes his family history and occupations and opportunities that have shaped who he is and has led to the drive and passion of 110. You will also learn about 110, how it came to be, their goal of creating 1 million careers by 2030, and knowledge learned from some incredible leaders who they work with. We hope you guys enjoy this episode.
Jones. CEO of 110. How you doing, sir?
I'm good. Nice to be with you.
Thanks so much for joining today.
Thanks for having me.
Little bit of a rumor going on that you just got off a red eye and for some reason decided to join the podcast. Can you confirm or deny that?
I can confirm it. No other place I'd rather be.
What a good answer. What a good answer. We're going to clip that. We appreciate you joining. Where exactly did you take the red eye to? So I guess you know where you're at.
Yeah, I did from Los Angeles to Dallas. So I'm in the DC area right now.
How's DC looking today?
You know, the temperature is pretty moderate. It looks like it's going to rain. So yeah, good day for the flowers.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. What a positive outlook. And before we start, I need to share some love with a world famous Dewey Norwood, who was kind enough to connect us. Maybe give our community some light about how you know Mr. Norwood.
So Dewey has been one of Wells Fargo's leading voices and implementers on their 110 journey. So I've been working with him and other members of his team for the last 12 months at least. And now he's gone on to greener pastures, if you will. He's really, really involved in the partnerships that Wells is forging with HBCUs. So he's just a great talent.
A wonderful human and been a close mentor to me for a number of years. Sadly, he's still a Mets fan, though, and I haven't been able to convince him otherwise. So I was fortunate to see the Braves knock them out of the playoffs, but of course, the Braves immediately lost, and so I couldn't talk too much junk for too long.
Yep, all you need is a day, though. That's all you need is a day.
Are you, a lot of good sports happening right now this time of year, right? Hockey, basketball just starting, football, baseball in the playoffs. You a sports guy?
I am. Particularly football and basketball.
Okay.
And I'm long-suffering in football. I'm a Miami Dolphins fan.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, so you guys are due. You guys are due for a season.
We're overdue, actually. So if we can keep people healthy, let's see how this year goes.
And who's the basketball team, if I'm allowed to ask?
In the basketball space, I actually follow more players than I do teams. So I'm a huge LeBron fan.
Yeah.
So wherever he goes, I wish him well. And right now, the Lakers, I need to wish harder because I don't think the Lakers are feeling those wishes yet. Well, but it's early.
If you can make a three-pointer, you might be able to walk onto the team because they need as much support as they can get.
It's funny you mentioned that. As I mentioned, I was in L.A. the last 2 years. I was trying to get my three-point shot resume to them. Actually, I have a daughter who's a basketball player. And she's probably a better three-point shooter than any player they have on the team right now. So I was trying to get her resume to them.
That's right. Hey, send them some tips. So I'm from Ohio. So I got to ask, what makes you so intrigued by LeBron?
You know, I think he is the best all-around player that I've seen in my lifetime. Who can, do it all, score, rebound, play defense, dominate inside and outside. I'm also impressed by his basketball IQ. I think he just has mastered the game. And then, honestly, I'm also attracted to the fact that he wants to make a difference in the world outside of basketball.
Yep.
That he's an engaged citizen. I think that whole package for me makes him, in my mind, the GOAT, as they say.
Mm.
I'll get in trouble for that one.
But, well, I'm going to follow up there, so hold tight to that. but very much to your point, yeah, I mean, incredible leader in both business, but also his philanthropic efforts with the school in Akron, and even just his donations outside the school.
All of the above. He's trying to use his position and his fame and his wealth to do good. So that all of those things appeal to me.
So I do have to follow up on that before we go into the real work, because I grew up in a household where anytime Michael Jordan came on, my dad made me come watch and say a prayer to Michael while he was on the TV. So can you confirm that LeBron is the GOAT over Michael Jordan?
Oh,
is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yeah, that's what you hear. That's definitely what you hear.
Appreciate the boldness. I'm gonna move on, but I appreciate the boldness.
You're gonna get me in trouble now. But and by the way, my family's from Virginia and North Carolina, so I'm hoping my North Carolina relatives will now continue to accept me back in the house.
Right before Thanksgiving, too.
That's right. I mean, I'd be breaking bread in Carolina for Thanksgiving.
But I mean, you know, speaking of your family and, you know, your background, and, you know, want to focus on 110 here in a minute, but, you know, research tells us you grew up on a tobacco and a corn farm. At one point in your life, you were leading a pretty significant media company, also working in the Department of Housing and Urban Development. So just like incredible experiences, even before, you know, this work of leading 110. And, you know, probably going to ask you a difficult question, but, you know, kind of growing up in those experiences and others, you know, what kind of takeaways or what lessons learned have led you to this point in your life?
Look, I think the the big takeaway for me is the power of sponsorship. Mm. You know, I had sponsors throughout my entire journey, right? Starting first and foremost with my grandparents. They were my first sponsors. But I had, you know, sponsors for the job at HUD that you mentioned, the job at the newspaper, the jobs that I've, in addition, held in local government and state government. Having somebody in the room where it happens, when you're not there, who can advocate for you, that's been, for me, a huge difference maker. And so my takeaway is everybody should have at least one sponsor.
Mm.
If we could provide that to all of our youth, it would change their trajectory, no question about it.
And sponsor can be a mentor, a family member, a colleague, somebody in their corner advocating for them.
Yeah, that's right. And it's more than somebody who's providing you advice. It's actually somebody who's, I'll give you an example. When I was trying to go off to college, the big issue for me was how to pay for it, right, for my family. I had an eighth grade science teacher who picked up the telephone and called this little college called Hampton Sydney and said, "This guy, you should be giving him a scholarship. He's worth it." I wasn't in the room. I didn't even know it happened until much after the fact. That's what I mean by a sponsor, someone who's advocating for you when you're not in the room and basically promoting you to places that you may not even think you're ready for yet. That's what I mean by it. So it's more than just someone who's providing you advice. It's somebody who's fighting for you.
Yeah, that's meaningful. And, you know, locally in Charlotte, where we're recording today, you know, a lot of conversation around economic mobility, but also social capital, and oftentimes defined as social capital as people that can lift up your names in the rooms, but kind of the concentric circles of people you know and the circles they're connected to, so that opportunity can be spread as equitably as possible and not housed by only a certain few that have access to that sort of social capital.
Yeah, that is just, it's hard to overestimate the transformative potential of sponsorship. No question about it.
You know, all those experiences have led you to do incredible things. And now, of course, you know, leading 110, which is incredible for a number of reasons, which we'll get to. But curious if you can provide an overview, but also including the overview of how 110 came to be, particularly, you know, sure. Our understanding from the research was right around, you know, in response to COVID, but as well as, you know, the murders of Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, and George Floyd.
Yeah, you have to go back to 2020 and remember what we had, right? We had the outbreak of the pandemic in the U.S., and that pandemic's disproportionately adverse impact on Black talent and other communities of color. That was followed, if you remember, by a recession that was in part triggered by the pandemic. And that recession, too, had a disproportionately harmful impact on communities of color in Black communities. And then you had a series of killings, right? You had Ahmaud Arbery, you had Breonna Taylor, most especially the just searing murder of Mr. George Floyd. And that happened at a time when we were sheltering in place to try to protect ourselves from COVID. And so when it was broadcast around the world, it really was seen around the world. Mm-hmm. Well, those series of events, I mean, they moved people, right? They moved a lot of people who hadn't questioned before to question, were we really the land of opportunity that we claimed we were, and that in some cases we thought we were. And a handful of CEOs asked and answered that question resoundingly, no, we're not as good as we can be, and we can be better, and we can do something about it. And so that actually brought together a handful of corporate CEOs, Ken Frazier, who was the CEO of Merck at the time, Jenny Rometty, she was the CEO of IBM, Ken Chenault, who had been the CEO of American Express and now is the CEO of a place called General Catalyst, or the managing partner, a guy named Charles Phillips, who had been a senior exec at Oracle, amongst other places, and then another gentleman named Kevin Scherer, who had been the CEO of Amgen. The handful of them came together, and that started the 110 journey. Now, what happened is they started looking at some data. Big picture context, they saw the incredible wealth gap between white families and Black families in America, even today. In fact, it's like a 10x difference. White families, on average, have 10 times more wealth than Black families. And then they started seeing what the actual wage gaps looked like. And so a big data point for them was you got this overall context of a wealth gap that breaks down along race and place. And then you have these data. If you look at all jobs that pay $60,000 and above, on paper, 79% of them require you have a four-year degree to compete. You look at all jobs that pay $40,000 and above, on paper, 71% of them require you have a four-year degree just to compete for the job.
Yep.
You look at all Black talent ages 25 and above in the workforce today, 76% of us don't yet have a four-year degree. So what they saw was you literally have a systemic barrier in the form of a credential, a four-year degree that is really preventing folks from earning their way into the middle class in America, right? How un-American can you get? So their thought was, this we can do something about. The private sector can make opportunities to earn a family-sustaining career more available to more people by using a skills-first approach, by removing that four-year degree requirement where it's not related to doing the job. And so this is what caused them to put this spot on the wall. Let's hire, let's promote a million Black talent who don't have four-year degrees into family-sustaining careers. That's how 110 was born.
Incredible, and so much resonates with me with what you said, but also, you know, un-American in the sense of that hurdle or that barrier preventing them from anybody from even having an opportunity to showcase what they can do and their skills without that, right? And so being so skill focused as you guys are, allow this black talent and individuals to get in the room to have somewhat of an equitable opportunity to reach these sustaining careers, as you mentioned, for their family.
Yeah. And by the way, so just to add to that, so this skills first approach doesn't just benefit Black talent, because if you look deeper into the workplace, this is what else you see. 83% of all Latinx workers ages 25 and above don't yet have a four-year degree. 66% of all white workers ages 25 and above don't yet have a four-year degree. Mm-hmm. So the theory here is, if we can fix this systemic barrier for Black talent without four-year degrees, we actually will be covering the entire demographic landscape, because 66% of all talent ages 25 and above in the workforce today do not yet have a four-year degree. All talent across all demographics. So this skills first approach really will help us, frankly, get talent off the sidelines at a time when there are 11 million unfilled jobs.
And just to double down on a few key points you said about 110, Mr. Jones. So, you know, part one, creating 1 million career family sustaining jobs for Black talent over the next 10 years. And so a few like follow up pieces quickly so we can frame this for the community here. 10 years starting when? So is that goal
2030 is the goal.
2030.
I'd like to have a few more years, but 2030 is the goal. Yeah.
a little extra urgency there.
Now, I officially started in March of 2021.
So we'll give you, yeah.
So they got to give me at least an extra quarter, right?
At least they can do. That's right. And then for our inquisitive community members out there, when we say family sustaining jobs, I know that probably changes market by market, but curious how people should think about that.
Yeah, so it's a great question. So the jobs have to have four characteristics. They have to pay a living wage. And we use the living wage calculator that the Massachusetts Institute of Technology publishes and updates every year. Secondly, the job can't require that four-year degree as a gateway of entry. That talent may go on and get a four-year degree, may get a master's, may get a PhD, but as a gateway of entry, the four-year degree can't be a part of that. Another piece that we don't want to be a gateway of entry is years of experience. So you can't require more than 5 years of it. Oh, it's got to be less than 5 years of experience. So, and then the last piece is we're trying to focus on jobs that are not going to be automated out of existence in the short run, right? Wow. So as long as the job has those four characteristics, we consider it family sustaining.
Great. That's hopeful. And have to think maybe, you know, if I could use the term intermediary, which, you know, could be a pro or a con, but the connective tissue you guys have, you know, may have kind of two end stakeholders, which could be make your job more challenging, right? Where you have the employers and where you guys are likely working to help them maybe reimagine their hiring process and some of the salaries and benefits and starting wages, as you said. But then also you on the opposite end, I imagine you guys have support on the talent that you're working to connect to these organizations as well. So curious how you and your team are able to balance both sides of those puzzles
knowing neither one of them are easy to solve just by themselves.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. So we have to aggregate the employers, right? We call it the demand side. So jobs that already exist, and then removing credential requirements on jobs to make them more available. And then also really working on intentionally focusing on Black talent without four-year degrees. We then, to your point, have to aggregate the talent itself, right? We have to attract the talent, and we have to make sure that the talent are equipped to be successful on day one, and that they have what they need to receive promotions and advancement, right? And so that leads me to two other players. We also work with organizations that can help to prepare talent to be successful, right? Coding boot camps, apprenticeship programs, community colleges, military transition programs. And we also work with organizations that can help to make sure that there are the talent supports that we all need to be successful. Transportation access, coaches and mentors and sponsors that we talked about, mental wellness services. And so what we try to do is to put together all of those players into a high functioning team and scale, right? Scale to hit that 1 million. And so the couple of vehicles that we use for this knitting together and scaling, we launched a technology platform that virtually allows companies to post jobs, talent to create skills profiles, matches to happen. We also picked about 25 places around the country to do a place-based approach where we have feet on the street trying to create relationships and make matches through those relationships in Charlotte or in Raleigh-Durham or in D.C. or in Boston. And so, yeah, we're trying to bring together at least four players to make this work.
Yeah. And that's comprehensive work, as you said, not easy to do one, let alone all four. And, you know, I want to frame this up for people as well in terms of the corporate partners and just your, the leadership, at least on your board, right? We're talking Bank of America, we're talking Delta, IBM, Nike, amongst others. So some pretty significant Fortune 100, Fortune 500 companies.
Absolutely. Lowe's, Cleveland Clinic, New York University. Yeah, we're talking about enterprises that, frankly, have a lot of jobs and a lot of job opportunities. On the other side of the coin, though, we're talking about community colleges. We're talking about places like Perscolas and Year Up and big military transition programs. I mean, we're talking about trying to make matches amongst these folks, bringing talent to jobs and vice versa. And so you need all of those players.
Yeah, maybe a two-part question if I could. Like, curious what you're learning from a business perspective from these leaders that you have access to, but, you know, in the strategy for 110, but also maybe perhaps your own individual leadership of what you're using in day-to-day or personal life from leaders leading corporations like this.
So I think two things I would say. One, the importance of the CEO making this a priority and really leaning into it and holding the enterprise accountable for results is the most powerful piece of this. The companies that are doing are making the boldest strides are the ones where the CEOs are investing the boldest amount of capital to make this happen. And I don't mean money capital, I mean their own personal blood, sweat, and tears, if you will. The second learning is the importance of trust building and sustaining, right? So think about what we have to do. We have to convince the companies to trust us that the talent is there, that we can bring the talent to the table that they are looking for. We have to inspire trust amongst the talent that the companies really want them in their midst, all of them, right? Mm-hmm. Their entire self, not just as a productive worker, but as a human being. We have to win the trust of these organizations like the Year Ups and those that are providing childcare services, that we truly care for the talent that we're talking about. We have to convince community colleges and others that there is a job opportunity on the end of the training that they're going to spend money to invest in making happen. Trust is actually the biggest, the most important currency of the whole journey.
Yeah. We just had a conversation around trust and accountability with our team members here in our organization. So very much resonate with that.
Yeah. That's the most important piece of currency.
And, you know, we're all about data and impact here at Shermco, and I know you are as well, but curious if you had maybe somebody that was a bit inquisitive and asked you, how do we know if 110 is currently working to date? What would you say to them?
Over 60,000 Black talent without four-year degrees have been hired and promoted since March of 2021.
Good for you.
So the bottom line is we're off to a strong start and we got a lot of work to do.
Fair. Good. Yeah, that's great. 60,000, I mean, nothing to to gloss over.
Nothing to sneeze at.
Congrats to you and your team.
No, it's been a team effort for sure.
And also, as we mentioned before we get you out of here, the world famous Dewey Norwood sent in a guest question. And so buckle up for this. So Dewey wants to know if you could deliver a message to corporate partners on why they should join the One TED family. What would you tell them?
Yeah. So I think the benefits for the corporate partners are access to channels for talent that they're not currently tapping into. A community of companies and peers who are focused on skills first hiring that you can learn from and contribute to, and an incredible opportunity to join with others to make an impact on the company, on the lives of Black talent and their families, and hopefully on the country's journey to become a more perfect union. I would put all of those as reasons why we're definitely trying to recruit more and more companies to this effort.
I'd have to imagine, too, as you all continue to be successful, it's going to change the narrative of just hiring practices for your corporate partners, but others across the entire board
that's what works.
And what doesn't, right?
That's the goal. The goal here is to change the narrative across corporate America, period. Not just those who join us, and we hope lots more will join us, but across the entire commercial sector.
And it may or may not call into question the effectiveness of the four-year college business model.
That's a separate podcast. We're not juxtaposing it to that.
Of course.
The real issue is, if I don't get a four-year degree by the time I'm 21 or 22, should that preclude me from earning a living?
Yep.
And we resoundingly answer that question, no.
Yeah. I think that's right. I'll get you out of here, hopefully, on a few fun and fast questions. What's one thing our audience can do to support the work of 110?
Your company, you can join, right?
Big,
even,
small,
even if
middle?
All sizes. Okay. We need all sizes. But let me just add this. Move to a skills-first culture where skills become the dominant source of success when it comes to hiring, when it comes to promoting, when it comes to evaluating, when it comes to development. That is, for companies, the biggest piece of contribution, if you will, you can make to this journey.
And if you were talking to a aspiring business owner trying to hire people with the skills first approach, what would be the very first thing business owner should do to make that switch?
What the business owner needs to do to make that switch is to make sure that he or she surrounds himself with some champions internally, because this is a cultural and mindset journey, right? And so you're going to need champions to help to bring about that mindset change within your enterprise.
Yep, I appreciate that. What musical artist is Maurice Jones listening to right now?
Well, there's several. So okay. I I'm old school, so you gotta keep that in mind. I listen to a bunch of old school Motown. That's where you'll find me most often.
So old school with the musical interest, not old school with the GOAT debate about
that. No.
So a little diversity there, a little diversity there, right?
Keep you on your toes.
There you go. I like that. last question. What does Square Pizza remind you of, Mr. Jones?
Square Pizza? What does it remind me of? Well, that's interesting. You mean just the notion Square Pizza, period?
You take this. You're a smart man. You take
whichever
this
whichever direction
you want. It's a safe space.
I think what I would say is what I know of Square Pizza is trying to make impact, and that's what it reminds me of. And I'm grateful for you, and grateful for it.
Well, we appreciate that. Thanks for all that you do. You know, we're huge
fans. You too.
Of yourself, of 110, of you persevering after a red eye from LA to DC to join us. But thanks for all the work you're doing, Mr. Jones.
All right, my friend. Good to talk to you.
You as well. Thanks so much for checking out the Square Pizza Pod, making a few selfish requests. If you enjoyed the episode, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps spread the word about the podcast, and share this with a friend. We appreciate it. Thanks.